for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 377 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. It's been a busy Kickstarter season. You can tell because this is another great week with two excellent Kickstarter projects worthy of your support. First up is Ed Jowett from Shades of Vengeance, and they have a current project going for Fauna Number 1. We talk about the character, about how this fits in the Shades of Vengeance universe, especially when it comes to comics, and what we can expect from them in the future. Be sure to look up Fauna on Kickstarter.com and support this project because it's definitely a great story. Then I talk with Tyler Chin Tanner, who's been on this podcast before and is a favorite around here. He has a Kickstarter going for what's called Deadbeats. It's a terrific music-themed horror anthology, something I've never seen before. It's got a wide variety of creators involved, including Tyler himself, who has a great story in there, which we talk about, as well as we find out what's going on with A Wave Blue World. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what both Tyler and Ed have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Hello, how you doing? My name is Dorothy's Jean. I am a creator and writer. I am best known for Spirit's Destiny.
And this is Ed from Shades of Vengeance. I've been working with Dorothy's on Fauna for a while now, and we've loved every minute of bringing this character to life together.
What I wanted to bring was some authenticity. You know, he is a black superhero, and I wanted to show the trials and tribulations that he have to go through in order to protect his community, especially as a black man. And I think the plotting and the writing, what Ed provided me for Fauna, it was such a remarkable thing. You know, I really had lots of fun writing this story with him. I just, it really elevated me as a writer.
I wanted to show a community of people from different backgrounds, different origins, living together and caring about each other. Fauna is a man who works to protect his community because of where they live, not because of who they are. And not just protecting specific friends or family members, or fighting random crime in a big city, and that's not something that we've done before.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Ed Jowett, one of the folks from... And you'll have to say the name of the company because my brain just locked up on me there.
SOV Comics, Shades of Vengeance.
That's right, Shades of Vengeance. And people who listen to this program regularly probably recognize that company name because Jonathan Lewis is the person I often talk with. But this is my first chance to talk with you. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can talk about. And I know you've got a book on Kickstarter right now called Fauna Number 1. And of course, that's spelled F-A-U-N-A, Fauna, like flora and fauna stuff.
Correct.
So how are you, Ed?
I'm great. Yeah, I mean, I've been listening, you know, every time John comes on, I listen to your podcast anyway. It's fantastic for me to finally be on it. You know, I'm really glad we managed to work out the time difference thing. Mm-hmm. As some of the listeners may be able to notice from my accent, I'm actually from England. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's the time difference thing going on, and it's often really tough to get stuff arranged. So John will often sit down and talk to you about the comics, but I've co-written all of the comics that he's talked to you about. So, you know, Lacuna and Blue Shift, Violet, mm-hmm. Lobo, you name it. Mm-hmm. I've put a lot of work into all of those. And, you know, I spoke to John and I spoke to you, Wayne, and we decided that I was the right person to come on and talk about Fauna because John has not actually done very much on it yet. He's going to do a little bit of dialogue editing as he does the lettering, like he always does. Mm-hmm. But I wrote this one with Dorothy's Jean. Mm-hmm. Some people might find that name familiar. She's the creator and writer of Spirit's Destiny, mm-hmm. Which is a big-ish indie title. Mm-hmm. Really, really fun to work with. And, you know, we decided to take Fauna, sort of a character that I'd already created but hadn't fleshed out very much, mm-hmm. and kind of build him into this full-on character with his own comic.
Now, before we get into the thing, I did want to you wanted me to clarify something about SOV, about your company, is that I'm always saying it's a video game company, but it's not. Why don't you tell people what it is?
That's right. We create tabletop role-playing games and card games, as well as comics, and also a little bit of audio content. But everything actually ties back into the role-playing games. Mm-hmm. So just because that's where I start when I create, I'm originally a role-playing game creator, and I've grown to do other things. Comics is very much because of Jonathan Lewis. Mm-hmm. You know, he's an experienced comic writer. He was before I met him, and I met him on my science fiction role-playing game, Era the Consortium, which spawned comics like The Bug War, which I know you've spoken to him about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I met him writing that, and we worked together a fair amount on that. But he said to me, Ed, I'd love to write some comics. So we grew into doing some comics together. Mm-hmm. And Era the Empowered started off as my superhero game. Mm-hmm. And when I created a superhero game, John, he turned to me and he said, Ed, you got to let me write comics. You got to let me write comics. We've got a superhero universe now. How am I not going to write comics in the superhero universe? We got to do this. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started with Lacuna, with Blue Shift, and so on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, we're now, overall, we're now 13 comics in.
Wow.
I'm just finishing my 9th tabletop role-playing game line.
Wow.
It's come to a total of about 70 books,
wow,
including comics, mm-hmm, so far. Over the last 5 years.
Wow. Wow. Now, why don't you, again, let people know how to get a hold of your stuff. I mean, you guys have a website, as I remember. Tell people how to get to the website.
That's right. You can go to www.shadesofvengeance.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/shadesofvengeance. And there's also, if you search for it, there's actually a group called the Official Era Games Group, brackets Era D10. And that's actually a group where we talk about all the stuff that's going on with all the games and all the comics, mm-hmm, as and when, you know, news comes up.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Now, let's get into Fauna. And I've always got to ask, because I'm always interested in knowing, why is it called Fauna? Because, you know, flora and fauna to me, like as I was mentioning, always indicates sort of nature or natural stuff. Why Fauna this time?
So Fauna, I'm assuming you know this already, so you know, don't worry about it. Fauna actually means animal, mm-hmm, forms, as opposed to flora, which is plant forms. And Fauna, he's called that because he quite literally changes into animal forms. Mm-hmm. We see 3 of them in this particular comic, mm-hmm, and he's capable of other forms. They just don't come up this time. He's not quite as prolific in his forms as sort of Beast Boy, for example, from the DC universe. He's got to do a bit more practice to actually get the forms right. And certainly he doesn't always entirely change into a 100%. So he has a bear form, but that bear form definitely looks somewhat human in its appearance. And the same applies to his lizard form. And he's capable of doing the third form that we see is the bird. So he's capable of being a full-on bird, but he's also capable of sort of being a mostly human with a bird head to conceal his identity, which he does at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's called Fauna because he takes on these animal forms as needed.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, at this point, I got to give you a congratulations because your goal has been met on Kickstarter. Talk a little bit about that, because, you know, it's great when Kickstarter folks get this done. You don't have to puzzle every day and worry every day whether somebody's going to donate. But at the same time, people should be pledging because you've got good stretch goals going on right now. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we did indeed make the funded goal. I'm thrilled. The support from the indie community has been phenomenal. There have been a lot of actual creators who've come along and backed our comic, which is, it's always wonderful to see when you get that kind of support. And as a result, yeah, I've put up some stretch goals. Some of them are phenomenally cool, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's this fantastic pinup that was done by the artist RN, and he really captured Fauna for me with this particular pinup. And I've decided that at the first stretch goal, what we're going to do is we're going to give that out as a digital wallpaper. So, you know, for your computer or for your phone, whatever works. It's actually already on my phone as my wallpaper because, mm-hmm, I like it that much.
Mm-hmm.
The second stretch goal, we're actually going to upgrade all of the digital versions of the comic. Mm. We're going to add profiles of the characters, the script. We're going to add some extra sort of sketches, a little bit of information about what's going on in the background, some hints as to what's to come. We're upgrading it to a deluxe edition, basically.
Mm. Cool. Very cool. Now, the thing we also need to mention, though, is that this project will end on Sunday, April 21st at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time in the States.
That's right, 9 p.m. UK time. Mm-hmm.
So now the good thing is you don't get the daily heart attack business. You get to sit and kind of enjoy the ride, although you're still interested, I know, in getting people to come and pledge to help. But now at least you know, at least the book is going to, you got yeah. to say.
What I know it's going.
Yeah, yeah. That's happening now. Just, you know, that's always a huge help to folks who are doing comics through Kickstarters. So I just think that, you know, congratulations on that. That's, I think you guys have built a nice fandom that is really supportive of the stuff that you do, because it's really good stuff. I really enjoy all the books that you guys have done. And I haven't gotten into the games, which is why I probably thought it was a video game instead of a board game. But I have to say, I love the comics, and I'm always just fascinated. One more thing before we dive headlong into the story is, do these, you talked about the board games and stuff. Is Fauna part of a board game? Where did the character come from, and where's he going?
So Fauna, and in fact this applies to several characters, Lacuna, Blue Shift, Penumbra, Violet, Lobo, all of these guys, they were actually the original set of characters that I offered as sample characters for trying out the role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of people would ask me at the end of a sort of a 40-minute session that we do as a demo at conventions, mm-hmm. a lot of people would ask me, oh, is there any more I can find out about this character? Mm-hmm. And, we started with Lacuna, we did some Penumbra, we did Blue Shift, and Blue Shift really for me was when it started to take off. I really ought to say that about Violet, because then it would be hilarious, because Violet can fly, obviously. But no, Blue Shift is where it really started to find its feet, as it were, and begin to prove it has legs. Okay, yeah, I can do that. That's a great pun. It started to move with Blue Shift, and Violet followed, and it went really, really well. And Lobo, at conventions, people can't get enough of these comics. They love them. They'll play the character. They'll go, oh man, that was fantastic. Where can I find out some more about this? And I've got the comic right there, and I go, oh well, here you go. You can have this. This is the story of your character, when they first started, and we're going to be developing and continuing this story until we reach the point where it is in this, where you were. Mm-hmm. But that's like 5 years hence. Mm-hmm. This is 5 years when 5 years ago when the powers first appeared. Mm-hmm. This is what they were like. Mm-hmm. And in 5 years' time, they grow, they change, they have adventures and so on. Mm-hmm. And given Batman is perpetually 39. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can fit quite a lot in 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Very true. Somewhere, I remember when DC one time put out a page and it said, Batman is always 39 years old. It doesn't matter how long the books have been coming out, all this stuff. He's always going to be 39. And I always get a huge kick. I used to sit and smile about that because this is one of the things comics wrestle with. And so your solution to that whole situation is, are they going to, age as the books go forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're going to grow as characters as well. One of the advantages of these characters being like the demo for the tabletop role-playing game is obviously in a tabletop role-playing game, you play the character how you want to play it. But I have an idea of where they are in 5 years' time, and I know where they're starting. Right, as I make these first comics. So I know what distance Fauna has to go or Blue Shift has to go to become the person that they're going to be in 5 years' time. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So I can follow that through and spread that out and follow their adventures through as they get themselves sorted out and get themselves to that point. And I've got it very carefully planned out. I'm a bit of a planner, I'm a continuity guy. Mm-hmm. And I do genuinely have a sheet of paper that explains like the next 20 issues of every single character.
Wow. That's something. Not everybody can say that. That's for sure. Now, let me read what the description is on the Kickstarter page. And there's several things about this I want to talk with you about. It says, when everyone starts mindlessly searching for Quinn's empowered alter ego, it is clear someone will do whatever it takes to find him. Now, the interesting thing about Fauna is that he's a person of color.
Yep.
Which I kind of find interesting because, you know, not every... Let's just say it's rare to find a person of color, be it male or female, who is the main comic character, the identity of the main comic character. Why did you decide to do that? It's just kind of an interesting choice.
Well, I should first say that actually he's not the first person of color that we've had being the main character. Penumbra is obviously, she's Asian. And Lobo is, well, it's complicated because I say she's Asian, but actually she's kind of not. She's of Asian descent, but Terra is not the same as Earth. You know, so you can't just point at Asia and say, yeah, it's there. Mm-hmm. Terra's a bit more complicated than that. But Lobo is Mexican.
So you guys,
or of Mexican descent.
You guys break the rules and all that. Go. If you go to comics, the vast majority of comic lead characters are white males.
Yeah, that's true.
I say that you guys don't follow those that pattern at all, which I appreciate.
No, actually the majority of our characters are female, in fact. in fact, Lacuna is the only white male book we've put out so far.
See, that's interesting to me because so many times get me, Batman is my very favorite character of all time. So I tend to go for that, but on the other hand, I want to see something else sometimes. I want to read, like your stories go places that I haven't seen in other comics before, which is something I just think you guys do so well. And boy, is it something that we desperately need.
Thank you very much. And I want to, you know, I want to be 100% clear. John is a huge part. As I said, John introduced me to writing comics and he said, look, Ed, this is how I do it. You know, these are the stories that I write. This is how we go. And I sort of picked that up and I learned from him and I ran with it and took it in sort of slightly my own direction. I mean, he and I write Blue Shift together. Mm-hmm. We're going to be writing an upcoming comic together as well that's not about Blue Shift. I'll get to that later, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we work together as well, but I also work with other writers. Mm-hmm. And I kind of build on what he gave me as my grounding in comics. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of build on that. And I think that working with the variety of writers that I do, you know, in this case, Dorfies, in the case of Violet, Jennifer Martin, in Lobo's case, Leonore, all of these writers that I've worked with, we've built up this sort of our own way of telling stories about the character, which is sort of just subtly different from when John and I sit down and do a comic. You know, they're slightly different every time. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely love that because you know what it actually reminds me of? It reminds me of the Marvel movies, which they are all clearly similar. You know, they all link up. They all have this same general feel, but then they also have the individual feel of the director or the writer or whoever it is that's giving them that feel. The one that comes to mind, I mean, think of the three Thor movies and how different each one of those three movies are. Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really interesting. And I think it makes for a different experience every time. Now, personally, I wouldn't do that with a single character. I'd try and keep the same writer and try and keep them a bit more tonally similar. Mm-hmm. But I have the luxury of being able to do it with different characters. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I love to have that opportunity and, yeah, we try to tell the stories that we want to tell, not necessarily the stories that comic fans might expect to see. We look at quite a lot of tropes and we go, okay, how can we twist that? Mm-hmm. How can we bring something you don't quite expect off the back of this? Mm-hmm. And we love doing that. It's great fun.
I have to say that there's a friend of mine who always says that don't give people what they want, give them what they need. And good storytelling is what we need. I have read certain stories 100 times. I mean, a lot of them come back and come back and come back. And I would much rather read a story that's creative and interesting than read something, you know, my cousin twice removed on my father's side is now my mortal enemy kind of stuff. I mean, I've read that forever. And so for me, this is why your stories always fascinate me, because you do make this leap into other areas. And, you know, variety, I always like to say, is something that I seek. And your books provide a lot of that for me. You don't do the same thing twice. You're always going in different places. And boy, do I love that. I need that so much when I read, because I do read a lot of superhero comics. And boy, I'll tell you, some of them are very repetitious. But you guys never do that. And I just know you guys, listening to you, it sounds like you really make a strong effort not to go where everybody's been before.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'll be honest, I am not anywhere near as widely read as you are in comics. You know, I've read comics, you know, particularly over the last sort of 5 years since I've been writing them, I've read a lot more. And I read a few growing up, but, you know, I was never a kind of buy one every week and, you know, read it kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And you know, I have the immense luck to work with a group of people who know storytelling so well, mm-hmm. you know, who understand, you know, what the tropes are around storytelling, who understand comics and say, hang on a minute, this is a trope that we probably want to avoid. Mm-hmm. So let's take one step to the side of that and do something else instead, right? We can even lead people on and make them think that we're going for that trope and then not deliver it, because mm-hmm. that's got its own power, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh, yeah, because you don't – the last thing I want is what I expect. If I can figure it out and I see it coming, I'm bored. I mean, I'll tell you right up the front, I am just absolutely bored when I know what's happening. I always tell the story. There was an American show called Heart to Heart, and it was about a happily married couple that got along. And I used to – and it had the worst writing in the world. I mean, the stories were 5 minutes into it, I knew exactly what was going to happen. But I would sit and watch it just because it was nice to see a happily married couple on TV, which you just don't see very often. But, mm-hmm. you know, to me, and comics have terrible trouble with relationships. Comics have terrible trouble with marriage and stuff like that. I don't know if your character...
Well, the fridging and the... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if your characters are ever going to go down that road, but, you know, you're building a universe.
Blue Shift, of course, already definitely has romance. Mm-hmm. I think she's the only character so far that I can think of, unless you count Lacuna and Penumbra, but I don't really. That's Penumbra toying with him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, some of the characters will undoubtedly have something that happens to them. At the moment, Violet, Fauna, Lobo... they're too busy doing their thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Lacuna at this point in the timeline is injured. Mm-hmm. So at the point where we are with Fauna, with Blue Shift and Violet, Lacuna's injured. He took a really bad hit at the end of his comic and he's injured for some time, which is why he's not getting a second comic mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. when everyone else is. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, Fauna and Lobo, they're starting. But, you know, Blue Shift, Violet, Penumbra, they're all getting another comic.
See, it's interesting to me that you're doing this in something of a chronological order. That, you know, most comics don't do that. I mean, you know, they'll hop skipping around. They'll come and say, this story happened before issue number 20. You know, and it's just because they have a story they want to tell that they have since changed. But you guys are making this a chronological story, it sounds like. And that's kind of interesting. You know, it rewards those of us who have been reading the books. And I think
I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan. Hmm. And the reason I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan, not least because, you know, the scope of that show is genuinely impressive. Mm-hmm. But what he did when he wrote it is he decided on a 5-year arc for his characters. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And he wrote that arc and he stuck to that arc. And when they asked him to write another season, mm-hmm. he said, no, I can't write another season because I've written the arc for the characters. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. Right. He wrote the odd movie that was set in between. That was like a mini adventure. And OK, that was an acceptance of, OK, well, I need to do something. Fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he refused to write another season for it mm-hmm. because it wouldn't fit in. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to be able to maintain that or keep that to that level. Mm-hmm. But I have so much story to tell. I have a lot that I know exactly what these stories are, mm-hmm. like within reason, like they're bullet points, they're ideas and so on. and they're certainly not fleshed out into full-on comics yet. But I know where these characters are going. I know where they've got to reach, and I've decided on several things they have to do in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And we can string that out a bit. You know, Blue Shift can take five issues to achieve what I'd written down in one bullet point, or mm-hmm. can achieve it in one issue. It doesn't matter one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But the point is that we have a journey to get to, and we can tell the stories that we want to tell as we go along that journey. That's where I'm talking about the, you know, it can take one issue to do a bullet point or five. Mm-hmm. If there's a story we want to tell first, we can tell that story and then move on to the major plot point mm-hmm. without it being a problem.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now let's talk a little bit about Quinn, who is the, apparently correct me if I'm wrong, but he seems to be the human version of Fauna.
That's correct. Yeah. Quinn is his real name. Yeah.
So who is Quinn?
So Quinn is, you know what? It's actually fairly mysterious. I have some ideas in my mind about who he is, mm-hmm. but it's not really confirmed in the comic exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. We know that he lives with his sister. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they live alone together in a, you know, reasonably nice house. Mm-hmm. He's got a nice car. Mm-hmm. He drives to work. Mm-hmm. We don't know what he does. Mm-hmm. Aside from being Fauna, obviously, mm-hmm. We don't actually know what he does. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much all we know about who Quinn is. Mm-hmm. This is coming, you know, I'm not ready to give everything away at this point.
Of course,
yeah. And you certainly get plenty of a sense. I mean, you've obviously read a good chunk of it now, Wayne, mm-hmm. and I hope you'd agree with me. You get a good sense of who he is, mm-hmm. even though you don't know the every detail about his character. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I kind of take the do you remember that line in the V for Vendetta movie, mm-hmm. Where, you know, Evie comments that she doesn't know anything about him, you know, where he grew up, who, whether he had any brothers or sisters or whatever. Mm-hmm. And his answer isn't quite this, but to me that always felt like a writing joke, mm-hmm. of, yeah, but you don't need to know, so I'm mm-hmm. not going to tell you. I mean, you don't need to know, so it's not part of the story. And obviously there's a backstory that he's the, you know, that he was a prisoner and so on. Sorry, guys, spoilers. you know, and he's lost his memory, mm-hmm. but the, you know, they just go, yeah, well, you don't need to know. It's just not necessary. And to tell this story, you don't need to know everything, every detail about Quinn's life. Mm-hmm. You just need to know that he cares about his community deeply. He cares about his sister deeply. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll fight to protect the community in particular and his sister as well. Mm-hmm. He'll do what it takes, you know?
It's interesting because I interviewed somebody who was doing a book, and it was in a world in which animals had evolved to the place where they were walking around on their 2 feet instead of four, uh-huh. and stuff like that. And people would come to him and say, well, when are you going to explain what that came? He says, I'm never going to explain that because that's not important to the story. It just provides a framework that is a little more fantastical than what you might read in other comics. And I often think a lot of people spend too much time explaining how things got the way they are. Now, I love to know how things got where they are. I always like that. But I don't always need to know that. And I think you're using the right thing. Because as I remember your comics, you guys don't do a lot of origin stories in the pure
Actually, you know,
story.
It's funny. I don't know if you're aware. I mean, it mostly was in the UK. There was a comic over here called Sonic the Comic. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the comics that I really did read when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I was a big Sonic the Hedgehog fan. Mm-hmm. And they didn't explain how Sonic turned blue until issue 7, 11, mm-hmm. somewhere around there, mm-hmm. right? Like fairly large number of issues. Mm-hmm. Because you didn't need to know, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and then I guess they decided they wanted to tell that story, so they told that story. Cool. Mm-hmm. If you look at Amazing Spider-Man, you know, where he came from, you know, he appeared first in, I'm sorry, I forget what the name of the...
Amazing Fantasy?
Thank you, Amazing Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Brain not working right. but he appeared in Amazing Fantasy, mm-hmm. and he was already Spider-Man, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The most popular superhero characters that I've ever seen, Batman included, mm-hmm. they appeared first, mm-hmm. and you found out later where they came from.
Right.
I want to say that Batman didn't actually take on any kind of origin story until the whole stopped killing people,
mm-hmm.
you know, thing happened way back when. Mm-hmm. I think that he didn't actually have an origin story until then, and then the parents' origin story, which is now obviously very, very well known by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I look at these characters and I think, okay, well, you don't need it. Mm-hmm. You don't need it to tell the story. Mm-hmm. And when I want to tell the story about where it came from, there's one character in particular who's not yet featured in a comic. Mm-hmm. I want to tell his origin story, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell his origin story. And it may be that his comic will actually be one of our first origin stories, although origin for this guy is a bit complicated because time travel and various other bits and pieces are involved. So, yeah, I can't say too much about that, mm-hmm. but you know, there's stuff that you want to tell and there's stuff that you need to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And sometimes you have to back off on the stuff you want to tell in order to tell stuff you need to tell.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't tend towards origin stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lacuna kind of had a flavor of it, mm-hmm. right? I mean, going way back to our first superhero comic,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was at home and he had his powers, mm-hmm. and then he left home,
mm-hmm.
right? And he mm-hmm. became Lacuna for the first time. And that, in a sense, was an origin. But if you mean origin story about when he got his powers, no, it's not being covered.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's only important when it's important to the story.
Exactly.
You know, that's the one thing I like. Now, I do want to talk about some of the other characters. You mentioned the sister. I don't want spoilers per se. I like to be teased, but I don't want to be spoiled. Does she have powers like Fauna, or is that something we don't know yet?
Well, that's a good question. That's mm-hmm. not confirmed in the comic one way or the other.
Okay.
I will say that she is, you know, you read the description at mm-hmm. the top of the Kickstarter there. Mm-hmm. She is the first person that he sees acting oddly,
hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
She's the first person he runs into, and there's this very intense scene. And I remember Dorfies sent me the scene, and I looked at the scene, and I went, wow, that's really, really intense, and we need to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually closed off the scene with a line that she thought was, like I slightly rewrote the scene,
mm-hmm.
And it ended up with this sort of funny moment of, wow, I'm going to switch you to decaf, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're getting a bit intense here, sis, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
And I remember she commented that was one of her favorite parts of the comic, just because of the way I rewrote it.
Mm-hmm.
She is an interesting individual. She's very important to the start of the story and the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not confirmed whether or not she has powers
mm-hmm.
in this comic.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that's something we can find out as we go along. It's probably not mm-hmm. important to know that. Are there other characters in this first book that we should be aware of? Or are they going to introduce them as they need to be introduced?
No, absolutely. There is another character in this book that you should definitely know about. I've actually written an update called Jan.
Mm.
Jan is her name. I mean, sorry, the villain of the comic is called Jan.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, I love the way the combination, I should say, Kellick, the penciler and inker, and Vaughn, the colorist, the way that they've, particularly Jan, the way they've brought her to life,
mm-hmm.
You know, she's described as Amazonian,
mm-hmm.
you know, and those shoulders, you know, you look at that page 3 and she's sort of, oh man, those shoulders are Amazonian is exactly what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is strong. She is very physically strong.
Mm-hmm.
But she has probably the most powerful ability of anyone we've shown in an empowered comic yet.
Hmm.
Maybe with the exception of Monolith, because his powers are basically limitless.
Mm-hmm.
Monolith, just for anyone who doesn't know, featured in Blue Shift number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Not hugely. He was only on about 3 or 4 pages, but he did feature in that comic.
Mm.
And barring him, she's probably the most powerful person we've had so far. Because I can give this away, because again, I've given it away in the update. People know this already. Mm-hmm. She is capable of controlling minds.
Mm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking, she makes Professor Xavier look a bit limited.
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
Everyone is searching for Fauna, going, hey, do you know who Fauna is? Do you know who Fauna is? Hey, do you know who Fauna is?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you know who Fauna is? That they're all walking around in this zombie-like state, just asking everybody and each other whether they know who Fauna is.
Mm-hmm.
That's her. That is all her. She has taken some level of control of the minds of the entire community and sent them out to look for Fauna. And of course, Quinn's sister doesn't know that he's Fauna. So that's what she's getting very intense about. You know, I need to find Fauna. Where's Fauna? And he's like, whoa, I don't know who Fauna is. You know, like you know, if you imagine you're a superhero and your sister asks you, do you know who this superhero is? You're like, no. He's got this immediate reaction of, no, why would I know that? What? And sort of that immediate panic that you can sort of feel he would have. And then, you know, he leaves and the community is all acting very strangely. They're all wandering around just knocking on his car window going, hey, do you know who Fauna is? And you know, she uses these powers to, you know, their absolute max the minute that he reveals himself, because he shows up. The thing is that because of his transformation, he is immune to her, right? While he's transformed, he's immune, because his brain is not entirely normal and human. Once you realize a little later in the comic just how far her influence has spread, it's genuinely scary. You know, what she is capable of. And the reason that I did this is one of the things that interests me in writing. And I should say, I loved the way that the Jessica Jones Netflix series dealt with this. What happens when you are the most powerful person in the room? You know, the fact that she controls other people's minds, does that mean that she's automatically a villain? No, of course not. Professor Xavier being a good example. But how many times have you not wanted, you know, is there anyone who can say they've never wanted to change someone's mind on something? And then if you actually had that ability, how fast would you get out of control? You know, that's kind of the question that I ask. And I think it pushes the character in the direction of being a villain just by having this power, because the temptation is so great. I want to have fried eggs for breakfast, not boiled eggs. So I'll change my mom's mind. Right. Because she's the one cooking. Or, you know, my boyfriend wants to go to the cinema and I want to go shopping. So I'll just change his mind. All right. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. But how fast does that get out of control when you're the most powerful person in the room? And I think that's quite an interesting question. I should say, at the end of this comic, her arc is not resolved. She doesn't die. You know, that there is more story to be told with her. Whether it's with Fauna or not is a more interesting question. But, you know, that there's a lot of story that she still needs to tell herself, you know? And she's here and she's doing this thing. And again, there's... You've read Blue Shift number 2, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And there is, you know, there is more going on. You start getting the hints in Blue Shift number 2. Fauna builds on that. Violet is linked in its own way. It might not be obvious now, but it is. Lacuna is not particularly linked, but it has its moments. And all of these things come together. There is something big going on. And so far, we've only had glimpses of it. Right? There's something huge that's about to explode. And what you might be feeling as you're, as you say, and any listeners who are reading all of our comics, you might be feeling that we're building towards something, and you're dead right. You've asked John many times, you know, are we going to do a crossover? Are we going to have, you know, a team up? Mm-hmm. Or a multi-hero comic anyway? Because mm-hmm. You're not wrong that not all of these guys are going to get on very well. Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. We are absolutely building towards that. Mm-hmm. Not every character that we've introduced is going to be involved in this particular crossover. Mm-hmm. And that's not an accident. I don't want to overload it. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a lot of stuff we need to do. Mm-hmm. We are only two comics away from it. Ooh. At this point. Ooh. We're doing Fauna, of course. Mm-hmm. We're going to do Violet number 2. Mm-hmm. That's an important piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a Penumbra comic, which... So you've read and talked about Penumbra number 1, number 2. Mm-hmm. You were talking about retconning things and so on and adjusting them. Mm. We're renaming them. Mm. They are Penumbra Adventures number 1 and number 2. Mm, okay. And the reason for that is you probably got the impression from them that maybe this isn't exactly the way it happened. Mm-hmm. Our intention was always that this is Penumbra telling the story of her adventures, mm-hmm. rather than sort of a third-person objective point of view that you get from most of our other comics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. So... Penumbra is going to get a third-person objective comic, which is going to be the lead-in. It's going to be, again, to use the Marvel movies as an example, it's going to be the Thor mm-hmm. to Avengers, mm. right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of the big piece of the puzzle that you'll go, ah, okay, this leads directly in and I can see how, if you see what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have then a team-up comic. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite ready to say who the characters are who are going to be in it, mm-hmm. but it's going to be a number of characters. Mm-hmm. In fact, I can say it's going to be 4 characters, right?
Okay.
It's going to be four major heroes that have all had their own titles. Mm. That comic is going to be called Aegis Number 1. Mm-hmm. It's the formation of a team. Mm-hmm. Everyone's still going to have their own stories. Everyone's still going to have their own adventures, but we're also going to have the world-ending threats. Mm. Imagine a Justice League where everyone is Batman. Mm-hmm. So they're doing their own thing unless there's something serious enough that they all come together, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause but by the time you get into later on in the Justice League, it feels like most of them just sit around doing nothing mm-hmm. apart from being in the Justice League. That's just me. I mean, I could be mm-hmm. wrong. Mm-hmm. But they're all going to have their own adventures still. They're all going to have their own lives, but this is the first time that they're going to have to come together to defeat a threat. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen threats that were too much for any one individual before. Lobo, obviously, ended up facing something that he felt he couldn't defeat at this time. Mm-hmm. Which was one of my favorite twists of that particular comic. I really enjoyed writing that because, spoilers, mm-hmm. but to have the hero do that, mm-hmm. it was really, really good. I really enjoyed writing that.
Okay, so it's called Fauna, and it's on Kickstarter right now, and as we mentioned earlier, it's going to end on Sunday, April 21st, 4 o'clock Eastern Time, and, you know, 9 o'clock your time. Question I think people need to know, especially since now that we know that all these are basically, there's some integration of these things. If people want to get the previous issues, where do they get them?
So the best opportunity right now is we're actually running a deal on the Fauna Kickstarter, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you can grab all of the comics on Fauna. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can go to our Shades of Vengeance store, mm-hmm. Which is on our website that I mentioned earlier, www.shadesofvengeance.com. Mm-hmm. And also a number of them are on Comixology. I believe Lacuna, Blue Shift, and Violet are all on Comixology. Mm-hmm. Blue Shift number 2 is not up there yet. I think mm-hmm. I think one or both of the Penumbra Adventures comics are.
But eventually, imagine all these will all be up there because
audience. It's unfortunate because Comixology doesn't really prioritize people who are not big names. Mm. And it makes it very hard for people like us to actually get stuff up on Comixology in good time. Ah, there we are. Lacuna number one, Revelations, the Lacuna comic. Penumbra Adventures number one and number two. Blue Shift Frenemies and Violet Unstoppable. All five of those are currently on Comixology.
Okay, sounds good. And we know where to start based on what you had told us. So Fauna is going to... when is the Fauna book actually itself going to be ready for people to read?
So John is currently doing the lettering on it. And I reckon that, you know, within about 2 weeks of the Kickstarter ending, really? I would think he'll be done.
Wow, okay.
I mean, we've only got some lettering to do, you know, all of the artwork's done. And you know, a lot of it's in the actual Kickstarter. So you can sort of scroll down and have a look at that. Mm-hmm. I believe it'll be within about 2 weeks of the Kickstarter ending. So like 25, 30 days time,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. That's from recording.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't think it'll be too long. I am obviously it depends on John and how fast he gets through the lettering.
Mm-hmm.
We all have lives; we're all part timers.
Oh yeah.
And you know we've got jobs and we've got lives, so we move through things as quickly as possible. But I don't see any reason why it should take a ridiculously long amount of time. Mm-hmm. I have said that the Kickstarter will deliver by July, but I'd like to think that's a bit pessimistic.
Okay. Well, it's better to do that because, you know, promise what you can do. And then if you come early, everybody's impressed. You know, if you come a little late, you know, if it comes a little later, as long as you keep us informed, we'll all be very happy. So it's a good thing. Now, I do want to ask you, though, when this Aegis comes to an end, are you going to collect all these, say, into like a trade format of some sort?
It's funny you should ask that question. Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. We are going to be collecting. So to me, given the length of the comics, mm-hmm. Roughly three issues seems to be about right for a trade, mm-hmm. For a trade paperback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that would mean, you know, looking at it, obviously, you know, perhaps Lacuna, Blue Shift and Violet number ones should all go in one. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Blue Shift number two, Violet number two and Penumbra. That we're going another one.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Lobo, we've got Fauna, and we've got another comic that is not quite done yet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's the one I mentioned earlier with the time travel-y thing, and that potentially it's going to be the first origin story that we actually do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can be collected into another one. We've also got, obviously, we've got Kazuki and Deathseekers. We've got the two Penumbra Adventures comics, and we didn't finish Penumbra Adventures with number two. You know, there's got to be more because we left on a cliffhanger, and we're not that kind of people. We don't leave things on cliffhangers forever.
Mm-hmm.
We do have to rotate through the characters because obviously we have a limited amount of resources.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, I mean, if our comics start getting really, really well funded and we can start sort of 100% guaranteeing that we can make the next comic,
mm-hmm.
we actually have parallel teams of artists. So I've mentioned both Kellick and Vaughn, who worked on Fauna, and I'm sure you'll remember the name Ramad Wisnabruto,
mm-hmm.
who does the artwork for Blue Shift and Violet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be doing the Penumbra comic I mentioned.
Okay.
So, you know, we've sort of got two parallel teams
mm-hmm.
who work as we kind of come around to doing that next comic.
Mm. Very good. Very good. I imagine knowing you guys have already figured what's going to happen after this story ends. Are you already starting to think ahead to that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot that I want to do. A little bit of it is talked about in the actual Era of the Empowered role-playing game.
Okay.
So that covers quite a long period of time in superhero terms.
Mm-hmm.
And... It sort of offers a, you know, potentially some insight into what might be coming for those people who want to be, shall we say, teased rather than spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
And every character has stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
Every character has an adventure that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tease you one more time. You remember Violet number one?
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen Fauna's lizard form, of course, from the page. It is not a coincidence that those two things look fairly similar. Yeah, there is a link there that is not yet explained, but yeah, that there are reasons behind this.
See, this kind of storytelling is really engaging to me. I love this kind of stuff. I like when we see things and, you know, that looks similar, but nah, they'd never do that. It's nice when there are little things that you guys hook together and make them really interesting, and I love to be surprised too. So
yeah, I love that too. I think Easter eggs are one of my favorite things, you know, not even the really, really subtle ones, like you got to look in the background and so on, but like the story-based Easter eggs or the ones which are right in your face and you're going, really? Really? Is that, am I adding something to this? Or, you know, am I putting a narrative around the story that doesn't yet exist? Is this where they're going? Or, you know, is this a clue to what they're doing? Or is this, like, is this just a coincidence? And it just happens to be the same graphic designer or whatever. And I love that kind of thing. And I put a lot of those in the comics. I love Easter eggs. John loves puns. He puts a lot of puns in the comics. Continuity Easter eggs are my thing.
Well, I love that kind of stuff, too. I like both the stuff that you guys do, both you guys do. So it's really going to great stuff. This Fauna looks really terrific. If you haven't gotten into it, I think you can still jump on the Fauna number one and still get a good enjoyment out of it. But I do recommend that if you can, get a hold of the previous books so that you'll get the whole story in there, because I think it's great stuff. I think, Ed, you guys do wonderful stuff, and it's great to talk with you for the first time. You have to say hi to Jonathan next time you see him for me.
I'll do that.
Again, it's Fauna number one. It's on Kickstarter, and it's going to be ending on Sunday, April the 21st at 4 Eastern Time. And I'm looking forward to this. I can't wait to get my hands on the full copy of it and to see what you got going next.
It's probably worth mentioning you were talking about getting all the comics. You can actually get all of the comics that we've done so far for $15. On the Kickstarter. That's six comics, six 22-page comics for $15 in digital format. If you want to catch up, and the the physical is a little more, but it is available if you're interested.
See, that's what I've backed this already, and that's actually the level I took, was the digital bundle. This is the full set of the critically acclaimed era digital in digital format, because I just, something told me there was a little more to this going on, so I had to get the whole set so I could sit and read. You know, it's one thing when it's a separate story, but when you know there's an overarching story that you want to be aware of, you got to get that, and that's the level I chose. So I'm glad to know that, because this is going to be good stuff. I can't wait for it to come out. It's going to be such fun. I'll have to get it, because I write reviews too. I'll have to write reviews of this one too, because it looks really great.
Fantastic. I'd love to see a review of this once you've read it and once you've seen it in all its glory.
Well, Ed, it's wonderful stuff. I can't wait for these good things, as I keep saying, but it's true. When the more stuff that comes out, when we get to the team up, I'm going to really particularly, being a long-term comics fan, I'm always looking forward to those kinds of things. So I love the individual stories, but then when it's like, I don't know if you had a chance to watch on the CW, they had what they called Elseworlds this year, where they crossed over like three or four of the shows. We got to see the characters interact and stuff like that. They even brought back a character from a TV show was back in the 90s, for heaven's sakes. And the guy who played the Flash has actually been the father of the Flash on there. But he actually showed up as the Flash as he was in the 90s. And I remember my jaw hitting the ground and stuff like that, you know. If you didn't know who he was, it didn't matter to you because the story made sense. But since I knew who that was, I love that kind of stuff. I enjoyed that. So anyway, that's the kind of things that I enjoy of your books too, because you tie all these things nicely together, and boy, it's just so much enjoyment I get out of a well-told story, and you guys just do it at Shades of Vengeance. So I'm always looking forward to what you're going to do, and I'm really looking forward to Fauna, and then we got even more beyond that that's going to be great. So Ed, you guys keep it up, and I am going to be supporting every step of the way, because I can't wait to read more what you're doing.
I have no doubt in that case that you and I will talk again before too much longer.
Well, that'll be good. I'll look forward to it. And thanks so much for doing great storytelling, because we need more of that in comics. So I appreciate you guys really making the effort to tell stories that are really engaging and really fun to read.
Thank you very much for the compliment.
people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Hello there. So good of you to join me. Allow me a moment of your time to tell you about my latest undertaking. Deadbeats is a music-themed horror anthology centering around the proprietor of a music shop containing a number of unusual artifacts. Each creator will weave their own haunting tale, revealing its origin. Joining me on this journey into the macabre are editors Eric Palicki, who co-edited the anthology This Nightmare Kills Fascists, as well as All We Ever Wanted, and Joe Corallo, who co-edited the Mine anthology benefiting Planned Parenthood. They've assembled a talented team of creators who are eager to send chills up your spine this upcoming Halloween season.
It's always great to talk with Tyler Chin Tanner from A Wave Blue World. And I always got to be careful to say that because I often say the wrong way. Brave New World, which I'm sure was just a little bit of the inspiration for that. And Tyler has a new Kickstarter going called Deadbeats. It's a music-themed horror anthology. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's always good to talk with you. Let's talk about Deadbeats. Why don't we dive in? As we're talking, we're recording this a little early. You've already gotten on your first day a third of the money towards your goal, and that's always a good way to start. So that's good. That's congratulations are in order for that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been fun. It's always nice to have, you know, hit that launch button and see things work out for you and people start backing the campaign. So
I was telling you, every time I look up, it keeps going. The number keeps going up, and it's just
I know it gets addictive. Like I gotta try to like break the cycle, like stop checking and just get some stuff done.
That's right.
You know,
that's
right. But when you know it's going up every time, it's kind of like, oh, you get that reward for it. So you keep going. Yeah, it's like a mouth getting the pellet.
It's keep going. It's going up a couple times just since I opened the page up so we can start talking about it. So that's a good sign. I like that. And of course, I probably won't do that the whole campaign, but at least you're off to a good start, and that's always a good place.
Yeah, Kickstarters are a funny thing. They definitely work in waves, you know. I mean, you need momentum and they keep going, but, you know, there are those slower times and you just kind of have to build momentum when you can.
I always call it the daily heart attack. You
yeah.
Log on to see whether somebody's pledged, and if several hours go by and nobody's pledged, oh, gasp. Oh, no.
Those are the slow times. Yeah, that's like the middle of the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've got, let's see, you've got, what, 30 days? On this campaign, and why don't we talk about the important stuff right now. It's going to end on Thursday, May the 9th at 8:59 a.m. Eastern Time, and that's good stuff. That's good. But how many Kickstarters have you done so far?
This is my fifth.
Fifth, wow. So you're getting to be experienced at this by now.
I know, yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is, you know, I do one, and it, you know, it exhausts you, and I'm like, oh, I'm it may be a while. Till I do another one, or maybe I'll take some time off. But then you send people their books, and the first thing they seem to say is, "This is great. When's the next one?" Or "Let me know when you do. You know, whenever the next one is left." So, I mean, the audience is definitely there. So it's a very rewarding process. So it keeps me going. So you know, we'll probably plan on doing one every year.
Okay.
And, you know, it does get a little easier each time, even though like the amount of backers increases. So it's like a little bit more work each time, but you know, the experience of knowing what you're doing and the mailing, the printing, you know, everything, it does make it a little easier.
I always forget, do you put your stuff out through Diamond after it gets, you know, all the stuff is all over with?
I've just started doing that now. Okay. Our last anthology, All We Ever Wanted, came out in December, so it was out through Diamond the same time I was sending it to backers. And the one before that, even though it originally came out in March of last year, we put it out in November because I started working with Diamond again. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with them now, you know, as a publisher. So I'm kind of getting back into the mainstream distribution after a few years away from it, which was actually kind of nice. You know, just doing Kickstarter and things like that.
Well, I see you at conventions, and I know several people who are comic creators who don't bother with Diamond. They just go to conventions and sell them, you know. Andre Compan, who does Yishun Shin, I see him all the time. I saw you at Emerald City Comic Con last year. I didn't get there this year. You probably were there again.
Yep, yeah.
I wasn't there, unfortunately. I love that con, but we didn't get there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, just because, you know, Diamond does have the monopoly, so they're kind of the only real distributor to get yourself all cross-country through comic shops, if you want to do it that way. But because of that reason, I mean, if you're not, like, up to playing that full game, you know, really throwing in with them, I definitely recommend people, it's an easier way to break into the business, mm-hmm. rather than being like, I'm going to do Diamond with my first book and everything that entails. I think it actually makes more sense to, you know, start small, build those relationships with the shops yourself, with the fans yourself, you know, have a newsletter, go to conventions, you know, have it in some stores. You know, I think that in a way that actually makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you get to build a fan base, and that's what's kind of exactly. good thing about it.
Yeah. Rather than be like, I expect all the comic retailers to take a chance on my new book and just be disappointed by your orders and have Diamond being like, nope, that's not enough orders to stay in, you know, before you even had a chance to get people to test your book out.
You know, I'm old enough to remember when there was more than just Diamond out there.
Mm-hmm.
There were several different companies, and they each had like a section of the country that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that was in Florida in the South, and there was one in Northeast, and they were all over the place. And the good thing about that was they sort of competed with each other.
Right. Competition is good for any market.
Yeah. I get frustrated because I always think that, you know, that just because they don't have to, you know, they don't have to get everything out. They kind of pick and choose which books they think deserve the marketplace. And I'm always... I get mad at them for that because there are a lot of good books that never see the light of day because Diamond kind of feels like, well, that's not going to happen.
And yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah, they'll make their decisions about what books they think will sell. And, yeah.
Because they don't want superhero books, for example. They say that DC and Marvel own those, and so there's no point in doing superhero books. There's a lot of great superhero books out there that are not from DC and Marvel.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that's got nothing to do with this, though, fortunately. This is a little different. This is a a music-themed horror anthology. Talk about that. Why decide to go? Well, one thing I did notice, I played your video on the Kickstarter page, and it did point out something I thought was really smart, is that this is going to show the light of day around the time of Halloween.
So
that's I always think that people don't think these things through enough. You know, stuff doesn't come out. They don't plan it for, you know, like Klaus came out by Grant Morrison, and it came around, it started around Christmas, but then it ended up in like April or May.
And right.
I'm sure those sales just, after Christmas was over, who wants to read a Christmas book in April? But the good news was past year, they put a Klaus one shot out, and it came out the week before Christmas, and I said that was smart. That's the exact time people want to read that stuff. So
there must have been some delays or something that first time. That happens a lot. You got to give yourself enough time.
That's right. Now, of course, so Deadbeats around Halloween.
Yeah,
I remember reading a little bit that you said that horror was not your initial. What's the best word to say it? It was not your biggest thing to do. And yet now here you are doing a horror anthology.
Yeah.
What happened? What made you decide to go into horror?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not against doing any genre, you know, it's just whether, you know, I think it fits, whether I think it's a good project. And this isn't like your darkest horror. I mean, you know, it's fun. It's spooky. It's meant to send chills up your spine, but it's not really like the grimmest or goriest type horror story you could put together. So I thought it was fun, and I liked the combination with music as well, you know, the music shop and that culture, a little bit of the occult. So it's fun. I mean, the editors were the ones, Eric Palicki and Joe Corrala, were the ones that brought it to me, and I thought it was a good idea. I liked what they had organized for it. So I was like, let's go for it. I mean, that's one of the things I like to do. I mean, let the creators, editors, whoever it is, you know, bring you something and see if it turns a switch in your mind, and then, you know, go for it.
So are you writing any of this, or is this basically?
Yeah.
You are? Okay. Well,
I'm writing a story. Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to give us a little bit of a spoiler, or do you want to wait?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I know mine probably the best. mine takes place in the 60s with a blues singer. Mm-hmm. She's got a really good voice, but she doesn't quite have the stage presence. So she makes a deal with like a devil type character, mm-hmm. and he gives her a peacock feather, you know, with an enchanted one that makes people not be able to look away from her. You know, it's enchanting. Mm-hmm. So therefore she gets the, you know, the attention she deserves for her music and the confidence, and, you know, that leads to her success. So it's a little bit of a, you know, a deal with the devil type story.
Hmm. Okay. Who's doing the artwork for it?
Aisha Sinev. I worked with her on both the Broken Frontier anthology and Loved and Lost. So this is our third anthology story together.
Cool. Okay, so yeah. That'd be fun. Do you remember how many pages?
Our story is going to be 8 pages, I think.
8 pages, okay.
Yeah.
Now, as I understand it, the anthology is going to be, let me get the exact number, 160 pages.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's a good one. You guys do a lot of anthologies. I've seen you do several of them, and what's funny is that you make it work, and like the other, like Marvel and DC and them, they all struggle to make those anthology things happen. How come you can make it work and the big companies can't? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, I mean, what are they trying to do? I mean, are the anthologies they create filling a gap in the market? Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know if they are. Mm-hmm. What we're able to do is create a type of book that's not out there. I mean, mm-hmm. that's our first goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have a music-themed horror, you know, anything right now, really. And then the other thing we're able to do, maybe because we're not a big publisher, is we're able to take chances on new emerging talents. We also mix in some veteran ones and people of different levels. And that doesn't mean that we'll just take somebody who's not up for the challenge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're able to reach across the medium, right, to other indie creators and, you know, bring people together on one book that readers might not be familiar. Maybe they're familiar with some of them, but not the others. And I don't know. I mean, indie comics, I think, is a good place for that. Kickstarter is a great way to fund that. I mean, the market is sort of building itself, you know, but you have to be willing to reach that market, reach out for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, who's doing the framing sequences? Because I noticed you've got a lady of color called the shopkeeper.
She runs the music shop that has these artifacts, and then she, you know, shows you this artifact, and then each story will give the origins of that artifact, you know, tell the dark, spooky tale behind that item. And that is a story that's drawn by Lisa Stirl. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know her work, but yeah, she's really good.
Mm-hmm.
She just did the artwork for a vault title called Submerged.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Stuff. Yeah. Yep.
That's good. That's good stuff. And she'll do a good job with that, too. I always like to ask, though, two things. Number one, a woman to be the thing, because you usually have, like, the DC will usually use Dr. Fate or the Phantom Stranger or something like that, a white male character. But here you have a woman of color being something of the narrator and stuff. That's I love to see those chances being taken. Was that your idea? Who came up with that?
You know, I mean, I'm trying to remember the exact process. I mean, Joe and Eric came up with the idea of having this shopkeeper introduce the different stories. And then they went to Lisa and told her the concept. And she drew three designs, mm-hmm. for the character.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we chose the best one. So I don't remember how much that was suggested to begin with, but that was this character design was hers. So somewhere between the editors and the artist, is how she ended up as she is.
Well, that's good, because I really like the look of the character. I think that she's going to be something fun to see what goes. Does this take place in New Orleans by any chance?
Where the music shop is?
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if they gave it an exact location. Okay. I know my story takes place in New Orleans, the blues singer one. Mm-hmm. But that would be great if the shop was there as well, too.
Yeah, that'd be fun stuff to see. And of course, all this is contingent on the campaign being successful. But as we're recording this, you're already about, and it's in the first day, you're about a third of the way there, which is a good sign. And I'm just going to be fascinated to see, you know, of course, that that May 9 deadline at 8:59 in the morning Eastern time, that's going to, you know, hopefully this is getting you very strongly along that way to get there. So I'm really hopeful for that, because I love variety, like I always like to say.
And yeah,
something fun.
Yeah, I think it looks good. I think we'll make it.
Yeah, it'll be good. So, and of course, a lot of this is contingent on, you know, all that good stuff happening. But you've got a lot of good name people that I see in there, like Kwanzaa Osafjeo.
Yeah,
from Black, he's in there, and Matthew Herman, I think, long lost, or not yours. Yours is long lost. I always forget. There's this title is a little closer to that, but I can never remember what it is off the top of my. Oh, it is long lost.
Yeah, mine was Loved and Lost.
That's right.
Anthology code.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, very good. So it's all going to turn out. Of course, Eric Blicky, who's done many good things.
Mm-hmm. And we've got the creative team from Doom Patrol from 25 years ago, Rachel Pollack and Richard Case.
Wow.
They were Doom Patrol creators, and it's kind of cool to get them back together working as a collaborative team.
That's fun.
Jen Hickman's really good. Yeah. Just so many good creators.
Rafer Roberts, who's done several good books that I really enjoyed. Just a lot of good people in here. Just all kinds of good things. It's going to be, you know, I'm dying to see. Of course, you got Tony Patrick, who's a Batman artist. Always good things for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being a big Batman guy. I'm always looking for
Are
these stories going to feature people that we know? Or are they going to be brand new characters? How's that? Or is it going to vary?
They're pretty much all original characters. I don't think anyone's using any established characters. I mean, they're standalone stories that have to do with a musical artifact. So, I would expect all new characters here.
Yeah, and the art styles seem to vary.
Yeah, I mean, we like to get different styles in there.
Well, that's good, because a couple of them on the pages I look, there's one that's completely black and white, and of course it may yet to be colored. Maybe that's
it'll be colored. Yeah,
and there's another one that's kind of a duotone. It's bluish with a black and gray background, which will be fun.
Yes.
So there's all kinds of good stuff going on. I expect a lot of good variety. And so 160 pages, and you know, of course, now you got a deadline. You've mentioned Halloween. Is Eric and his co-editor, are the pressures on them basically to make sure everything comes in? Do you crack the whip? How does that work?
Yeah, we all have to. We all have to work together, get the work in, make sure it's done in time, hit our print deadlines, and make sure it's out. And I want to make sure, I really want to get the book like out and start getting it to backers before it goes through Diamond. That was one of the things that was tough about All We Ever Wanted, was because I want to do the print run all at once. You know, once it's ready, I want to have them send it to me. I want to have them send it to Diamond. You know, and we had a problem with the printing and with the delivery to me. So things got a little delayed. So some of the backers got their books before they were in stores, but some of them didn't. And I really want to make sure I'm on top of it this time so I can get it out to backers and the retailer backers who have backed it, that they have it before everybody else, you know? So yeah, it's important. I mean, that's one of the big challenges of Kickstarters or just publishing in general, is make sure everybody's meeting their deadlines, making sure you're meeting your deadlines on getting the book to print on time.
My understanding is there's more than 20 comic stories and more than 40 up and coming creators and industry veterans involved with it. So that's going to take coordination on your part.
It's a lot. Yeah. I mean, luckily we're already well into the process, but still a lot just to make sure they come in.
Well, hopefully that won't be, because you've got experience with all these, and Eric too is an experienced comics guy. Joe Corallo too. You're bringing your experience to bear.
Joe worked on the Mine anthology, the Benefit anthology for Planned Parenthood. So, I mean, he's had some experience. Mm-hmm. You know, Eric's worked with me with this Nightmare Kills Fascists and All We Ever Wanted. So mm-hmm. we know what we're doing. This isn't our first rodeo.
Well, it'll be good. That'll be fun for that. So you probably don't know much about the specifics of the different stories at this point, so we probably can't talk a lot about that. But I'll just mention a couple that I see on the Kickstarter program. There's, oh boy, here's a name. I always get these supernatural ones. I can never pronounce, like Chuth Cthulhu. I never get that right. The Cursed Saxophone of Skasferatu, looks like, is one of the stories.
I think your guess is as good as mine. Yeah, Skasferatu.
Yeah, Dan Bursk Books. It must books. I can't pronounce the illustrator's name. Buxa and Matthew Sumo. Yep. And then there's Vanishing by Sally Cantarino, and a script from Matthew Ehrman. So mm-hmm. those are the ones we see on there. So there's lots of other good stuff on that. So I'll be really curious. How do you keep people informed? Do you do the updates to the Kickstarter so that people know the different stories that are coming?
Yeah, as some work will come in, and it will come in while we're running these campaigns, we'll do updates to show people the new artwork on the anthology as it's developing. That's one of the cool things about Kickstarter is, just for any level pledge, you're involved with the campaign, so you can see things as they develop. You get the background, the updates. So that's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Plus, we also have one of the lower rewards, the digital rewards, is part of it is we do the PDF process. Mm-hmm. So we'll put together a PDF that shows a lot of the work as it's being put together. You know, the early stages, the sketches, the inks before the colors, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you put the Kickstarter project together, or did you work with Eric and Joe on that, or how did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, Eric and Joe helped me, come up with the rewards and write the description. Then I worked with my friend Justin on the video. He shot me at Excalibur Comics in Portland. I was out there for Emerald City Comic Con and visited Portland and shops there. So we shot the video and edited it and put the music in. You know, it turned out pretty great. Mm-hmm. We thought it was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. I tried to do a little bit more humorous this time.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit Twilight Zone-ish.
Yeah. That was my inspiration. Like, I wanted to just, at first I was going to try to sound like, what's his name? The,
Crypt Keeper?
The Crypt Keeper. Oh, I'm blanking on the guy, the old, like, horror guy that would do
Alfred
the introduction.
Hitchcock?
No, Vincent Price. That's what I was thinking. Okay. At first I was like trying to draw inspiration from Vincent Price, but then I was like, no, I'm actually trying to do more of like the Twilight Zone guy. So I watched some intros to Twilight Zone and did something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
The thing of it is I think a lot of humor helps when you're doing Kickstarters because if you take it too serious, even like a horror book, if you're too serious, then people don't, I don't know what it is. It just comes down as too morose sometimes. And I think it's better to have fun with it and to enjoy it and things like that. So that's
yeah. Cool. I think you're absolutely right with that. Yeah.
Good. So where we stand right now, because it did go up since last time I looked. I don't want to get your expectations way too high, but it did go up since last time I just looked at it a few minutes ago. So
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
Now I do want to ask that Joe. He used to work at Valiant, right?
Joe Illidge. Yeah, my editorial director.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the same editor as on the anthology.
Right.
The specific anthology editor, Joe Corallo.
Okay.
Joe Illidge works for Wave of the World as editorial director. So he sort of sees everything that comes in. Oversees everything that comes in. Mm-hmm. And he's editing some of our new series, some of our new creator-owned series, which you'll see later this year and next year, which we're really excited about. Mm-hmm. He's a great person to come on board. He worked for Milestone. Mm-hmm. At DC back in the day. He was with Lion Forge. Mm-hmm. He was at Arkea before it was sold to Boom Studios. A lot of experience in the industry.
Very good. Because, I talked with him, I think it was New York last year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was, but he was still at Valiant at that point. But the yep. comics industry, honestly, there's a lot of transition going on. It just seems like it's always happening.
There is a lot of transition. I mean, I hope to keep some consistency at a Wave of the World mm-hmm. here, but you see it. You see a lot of movement, industry shifting around, companies shifting focus, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So I've got to ask you though, as far as horror goes. It seems to me like Image is the one that does a lot of horror books. Cullen Bunn and all those people seem to do a lot of stuff on there. So you're taking on one of the big guys when you do this kind of thing. In that
am I? I don't know if there's any direct competition. I mean, Image is just huge regardless. I mean, they have sci-fi and superhero and, you know, I don't know that you need to like, think you're taking somebody on just by doing something like this. I mean, we're not at a Wave of the World. I mean, we're not going to do a lot of horror. You're not going to see much of that here. I mean, we'll pick and choose our topics. And this, like you said, this makes for really good timing for the Halloween season. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to have it out for that specifically. Mm-hmm. But we do a bunch of different genres and moods with our books and our stories. So I don't think you have to worry too much about too much horror.
Yeah. Well, because I always like to say that, you know, the people are worried about superheroes and Marvel and DC and all that stuff. And yet I see some really great superhero stories that are not from Marvel and DC. So I'm always, you know, I don't think you're necessarily challenging them by doing superhero stories. That's something a little different than what they would do. So I think with your thing, you've got this ability to tell more than 20 different stories. And you get to have all kinds of fun with it and do your own unique thing. Because it's one thing that always bothers me is when people decide they gotta, you know, you gotta have an ongoing book and you gotta do something more than, you know, six issues or something like that. Then, of course, you gotta stretch your story out. But with your shorter stories, you get to tell, you know, use a format that comics don't use very much these days. And that's the old short story, which I like, because you can do anything in those short stories. You can kill all your characters if you want by the time you get to the end, because you don't have to bring them back.
That's right.
That's why I like that.
And that's an appropriate one for this one, too. I'm not having surveyed all the stories. I don't know, but I imagine that there'll be a good amount of deaths on these stories, especially since the item that each story revolves around, you know, ends up in this music shop with a shopkeeper. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there must be some reason why the item isn't with the same person it is within the story. So, mm-hmm. Yep.
That'll be fun. It's going to be good to see. It's called Deadbeats. And the deadline is Thursday, May 9th at 8:59 a.m. Eastern Time. So I wouldn't wait. I would go and do it now so that you can get in there and support it. And, you know, give Tyler here a chance to relax a little instead of having to go to the website every day and say, how are you doing?
That's my own problem, man. I just need to get over it because it's going well. But I'm still like, I don't know. Once you get in the habit, it becomes like a tick.
Yeah, but you just got to do it. Of course, you want it to succeed, and you go, that's a natural thing. So you got to get out there and try to find out what's happening. But if we get out there and support you before that and you get there, then all you have to worry about is stretch goals.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah. We got some good stretch goal ideas. So let's get us to that point, and then you get more stuff added on your reward.
That'll be good. So Deadbeats, get out there at the Kickstarter and support that. Tyler, why don't you give us an update as to what's going on at Wave of the World? What kind of projects besides this good thing do you have going
on? Man, it's a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah. Towards the end of last year, and with All We Ever Wanted anthology doing so well, I really just decided that, all right, what am I trying to do with Wave of the World here? Am I going to be a publisher? Do I have the support and then the direction that I need? And, you know, as you noted, I hired on a couple people, a head of sales and marketing and an editorial director, media director, and an art director. And, we're putting together some really fun stuff. I think, you know, our company's been known for anthologies, for art books, and we're going to keep that up, and for publishing creator-owned work. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do some more of that as well. So we've got some new creator-owned series that are coming out. You'll see a couple before the end of the year, which I'm really excited about. We haven't officially made the announcement, but I mean, there's been enough stuff online that I think I can mention it. I'm writing a new fantasy series called Mezzo. And that'll be out before the end of the year. Hoping to have the book for Christmas. And Dead Legends, which is, you know, an old school kung fu type storyline. We're hoping to have that premiere issue for New York Comic Con and then the collection for the holiday season as well. And then, yeah, I mean, we've already got 2020 filled up with all our other projects. Those are the two we're releasing this year, but along with Dead Beats and a new art book. But 2020 is already stacked. I can't tell you what yet, but man, get ready.
Okay, well, now, of course, you've raised the question. How do we keep up with your good things? Website, Facebook, well, how do we do that?
The website's super easy to remember because I pared it down to the four letters. It's just awbw.com, you know, Wave Blue World, awbw. And then on Facebook, yeah, just if you can remember, a Wave Blue World, Twitter, same thing, you know, at awavebluworld.com. I also have a newsletter. If you go to awbw.com and just scroll down under the main image, you can sign up there. That way you'll be the first to know anything that comes up. You know, try to make it as easy for you as possible.
Do you tend to, mail these out? You said you're getting back into Diamond, but do you tend to do things like to individuals rather than to go through stores and stuff, or how do you do it?
Well, I have a shop on the website. You go to awbw.com, go to the shop, and any book that we have out, you know, I'll mail. You just do the PayPal checkout, a little bit for shipping, and, you know, I'll send you one directly.
What about digital? Are you on, like, Comixology and good things like that?
Yeah, I'm on Comixology. I think towards the end of the year we may get into doing direct PDF downloads from our website, but certainly, yeah, there's Comixology.
Well, that's good, because I like Comixology when I'm getting to something that I can't find anywhere else. Then I'll download it, and that'll satisfy me until I come across a paper copy.
Yeah.
So that's always a good thing. Now, because the other thing, as you mentioned, you go to conventions, you went to Emerald City Comic Con. What is up for you for the rest of the year on as far as conventions go?
Oh, a lot. I'm going to be up at the Hudson Valley Comic Con next month, which is near me in Poughkeepsie. Then we go down to the Heroes Convention in Charlotte, which is one of my favorite shows. That's really fun.
I think met you was at that con.
Okay, yeah. I know I see you at Heroes Con in Emerald City sometimes. Yeah. So. Yeah, are you going to be at Heroes Con this year?
No, unfortunately, I don't think so. But yeah,
okay.
This year we're kind of going other places where we haven't been.
Okay, that's fine.
Except I think we're going to be in New York. I don't think
we'll be back. Cool.
Okay, where else are you going to be?
So then in July I'll be at San Diego Comic Con, which will be fun. Then in August I'm doing a little New England tour. I'm doing Terrificon, which is a Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, and then Fan Expo Boston. And then September I'm actually taking off as of right now, but then I have three conventions in October. There's New York Comic Con, there's Baltimore Comic Con, and then there's Alamo City Comic Con in San Antonio.
Wow.
So busy October, and that's when Mezzo number one comes out, the print edition, and we'll have a couple convention variants as well, too. Not huge into the variants, but, you know, like fun stuff, like a convention one, you know, will be cool. So, yeah, that'll be a fun October.
Oh, okay, because it's funny you bring up variants, because I've been wrestling with the notion of variants with stuff.
Yeah.
People seem to like to do a lot of variants, and I don't buy variants, to be honest with you.
And that's great, yeah. I mean, we're only going to have one edition through Diamond, through the direct market. You know, one $3.99 copy of number one. You know, so not trying to do any of these, like, incentive or make people buy this or that. But then, you know, my take on it is things like conventions and stuff like that, sometimes people like to get something that's a little more souvenir special. So, I mean, I'll do it. You know, nobody needs to buy it if they don't want it. But, you know, gives an opportunity to do a little of that just for the people who enjoy it.
And there's certainly a lot of people who enjoy that. I You know, this book that I work on is Stabby Bunny, and during the first six issues, we ended up with 25 different variant covers.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. And we started collecting them all to put them into, like, the trade has a collection of the different covers.
Right.
And we went, holy smoke, 25. Did we really do 25 variant covers? And of course, I'm not one for variants, as I said. I'm going like, well, okay, that's what people wanted. That's what they get.
Yeah, I mean, to each their own. I mean, to me, it's very important. Like, I don't want anybody buying my book for any other reason than to read it, you know? Yeah. And if they like a variety of covers, you know, great, you know? But if someone's buying it just because they want a variant cover or a collectible or something like that. And I mean, only, you know, it's fine if they're also into that side of things, but mm-hmm. you know what I mean? If they're not going to crack that open and read it or read one of the versions and you know, it's not what I want to do. I'm not going to make something specifically for that.
So that drives me crazy. People take it, bag it, board it, put it away.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they want to also collect it, if they love the series mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, but I also want the collectible and just put it away, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to judge people too much of what they want to do, but I'm not stepping into the market of pure collectors or variants. You know, it's not what I want to get into.
It's funny. I talk with people about collectors and stuff like that. This one guy I know, I saw him at ECCC last year, and I was after him because I knew the next issue of his book was coming out that I really loved to read. And he started to apologize to me that he couldn't get me a good condition one.
I said,
don't worry about that. I said, all I want to do is read it. I don't care if it could be one somebody sat on as far as I can.
As long as
I can read it, I'm going to be happy about it. And he started talking about how important collectors are and stuff. And I said, believe me, I know. We see it with Stabby Bunny. We've seen a lot of collector things go on and stuff. But I'm a reader first and foremost. I do buy more than one copy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely. Like Detective 1000, I bought a couple. But it leads me to ask you something though. As far as like ongoing titles, you seem to stick to like larger groupings. You know, we talked about anthologies, and some of your books sounds like they're going to be one shots and stuff like that. Do you guys intentionally keep away from ongoings?
We're definitely not going to do an ongoing in terms of doing a comic book that comes out every month. Mm-hmm. We are starting to do some serialized, some titles mm-hmm. like Mezzo, like that'll be a 6-issue first arc.
Mm.
So we'll put that out, but that's just volume one, mm-hmm. you know? And then, you know, once that's complete and hopefully it has a good reception, you know, I have a volume 2 and a volume 3 and 4 in mind. So you're going to start to see some things that are 3-volume, 4-volume, 5-volume, you know, maybe more. So they'll still be broken down into story arcs, you know, and put out that way. But, you know, we have some longer form stories to tell,
mm-hmm.
Including myself. So, yeah, you start to see more of those. You know, you just as a small publisher, you don't want to jump into that unless you really have like the one thing that you're doing, you know, like Terry Moore or something doing Strangers in Paradise mm-hmm. for so long. But for us that we're doing a bunch of different things, we didn't want to get weighed down with too many long running series.
You've got the shorter stories in your anthologies, and then you've got the other books that are longer stories.
Standalone graphic novels as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but we're going to start doing some that are like graphic novel, but then there'll be another one as well.
Mm-hmm. So where do you want A Wave Blue World to be in 5 years?
I want A Wave Blue World to continue creating books that people want to read. They want to own. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to read them. They want to be able to buy them for their friends and their family. Mm-hmm. I want them to enjoy the medium of comics. You know, I just want to bring that out to the world, like more people. I mean, I just love this medium. I have since I was a kid. It used to be such a small thing that only particular people read. Mm-hmm. Not that it has to be so like mainstream or whatever, but I think more people would enjoy it if there wasn't so much of a stigma or an insider sort of feel to it. So I mean, that's really, we're trying to branch out, mm-hmm. make this sort of a global industry, mm-hmm. And tell really good stories.
Well, you know, there's so much room in this industry for to make a variety of storytelling. That I always get frustrated with people who only want to do one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, my one thing is, you know, like, let's say you only did anthologies and that was all you ever did. Then that would be a little frustrating to me because, you know, you're doing other kinds of storytelling too, I think, that really, it flexes all the different writing muscles that everybody has to be able to tell more than just that. It's like somebody always does Westerns. I only write Western stories. You know, that gets frustrating after a while because they've got to have more stories than just Westerns.
Right, yeah.
So for you, I think it's great that you can do this variety to it.
Well, I love to jump around. I don't know, maybe just that I grew up, like, I feel like maybe in the 80s with movies and comics, there was just tons of genres out there. I mean, everything was just a little different. You never really felt like, oh, I just have to always read this one type of thing. I mean, I guess superheroes were very dominant in the comics, but there's always a lot of other stuff coming out, yeah. You know, that time.
Well, your stuff's always creative and always fun to read, and I always enjoy it. And I got one more question for you.
Great.
When I watch the video... there is that your daughter that walks in front of you during that, and I'm not going to spoil what it is, but she says something quite funny. If you want to see what's going on with that, go to the Kickstarter for Deadbeats, and you'll see a video there, and you see Tyler in there talking to us. But then at some point, I think it's your daughter that comes. I haven't, you know, don't know.
My daughter Maddie. Yeah, she's been in all the videos actually.
Oh really? I didn't know.
She makes little cameos. Yep.
Oh, okay. Because she said something that's quite funny.
Yeah.
I enjoyed hearing that.
That's usually what she does. Yeah. Pops up and says something funny.
So this is kind of like a Stan Lee setup.
Yeah, she's our Stan Lee.
Well, it's great stuff, and I'm looking forward to Deadbeats. I'm looking forward to all the stuff you're going to do, Tyler, because I'm just going to have to keep track of the stuff you do. Those kinds of things.
Yeah, please do.
Now, one other thing I want to ask you is that, is there social media that we can follow you on? You know, you got the website. What about, do you have like Facebook? Do you have Twitter? How's that go?
Yeah. You just type in A Wave Blue World, in either one. It's just, that's what the page on Facebook is called. That's what the Twitter is, you know, at awaveblueworld.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. So, boy, you're a busy guy.
And yeah.
That's good for us because we get to read the stuff you're working on, which is always going to be great fun. So, I mean, I think the first time I saw you way back in Heroes, you were doing that one book about a game show, about a reality TV.
Oh, back in Adrenaline. Yeah, that was my first one.
Yeah, I read that
2009.
One. I loved that one. I saw that one, and I loved that whole story, and that's what got me hooked onto your stuff.
Oh, that's great.
It was
great.
Such a good one, you know, and I still think that should be a TV show. I really do.
That would be fun. You know, I'm talking, speaking of Joe Illidge, my editorial director, he was kind of looking into that. It's like, oh, we could still spin this off into something new, something different. And I was like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't mind revisiting that. That was such like the first, you know, that was the first comic project I did. I was actually still in art school when I started that. Mm. It would be interesting to give it a new life, a new iteration.
Yeah. If somebody wants to get a hold of it, can they still get it through your website?
Oh yeah.
Cause that's a good story. That had a lot of interesting things going on to it. I have this thing about reality TV. It drives me insane. Mm-hmm. And so this book actually ties into some of my concerns about reality television. So I really loved that. I thought that was such a good thing. So.
Oh, great. That's so nice to hear.
Good stuff to go. So, Tyler, man, keep it up. Keep things going. And, man, I hope A Wave Blue World just continues to grow and grow, and we get to see all kinds of good things from you guys as time continues to pass. Maybe this will rise up there and give Image a run for its money at some point.
Well, yeah. I mean, just to be involved in the same conversation is great.
Well, that's good. Well, keep it up, and we'll talk again sometime really soon about how things are going. But until then, be sure to get to Deadbeats at Kickstarter and do it before May 9th because we want to make sure that this thing gets where it belongs and that in our hands so we can read it. So keep it up.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.